Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. If you have no idea what you stumbled upon, this is the Entrequeerneur Show with Ace Laveau. I am your proud queer identified host, Ace Laveau. And again, I'm glad that you're here. Hello to every single solitary one of you. I'm from Oklahoma. So when you're brought from Oklahoma, you speak when you enter a room. It may be a telephonic room, a virtual room, a physical room. Regardless, you make sure that when you step in that room, you say hello to the people that are there. That's just good manners when you're from where I'm from. I hope you have had an amazing moment of your life since the last time we have been together. You may have been together, it may have been a week, it may have been a day, or you may be going through an Ace Laveau binge right now and just listening to every single thing that has been put out there. And guess what? You can do that. Feel good about your choice. That's why this tool, this resource is available. It's so that if you desire to make us binge worthy, we will support you in that. So if you have no idea what the Entrequeerneur Show is all about, or even the term, what this is it serves those that are at the intersection of what it means to be divinely queer and those that desire to be in business for themselves. Me being an entrepreneur coach for nearly 10 years, I definitely understood that when I was helping someone that identified as being straight or heterosexual, that looked like one thing. And then when I was with my queer identified, my LGBTQ plus people, and I'm helping them start a business, it was different things that came up. So there was more feelings of not enough, more feelings of, can I really be authentic in my queerness and the business? So, of course, being from Oklahoma, it may not feel so good by always having your sexuality on the forefront because you think, oh no, maybe they don't like me because of that. Maybe I'm not getting business because of that. And I have learned over time, fuck all that. Be you loudly, be you in color. Whoever is meant for you is meant for you. And guess what? If they're not, they just not. There's nothing you're going to do. There's no clothes you're going to wear. There's no color choice in your brand that you can change to make them your people if they're really not your people. Because the experience, the monetary or service-related exchange will just piss you off forever and always until you are finally authentic with yourself and with them. And luckily, this whole idea, this whole conversation around being authentic is what we're going to be talking about today. And I have somebody coming on that can speak to this and speak to this well. Speak to this on a level that will serve you. Speak to this on a level that will make a difference for you wherever you are in your life, wherever you are in your business journey. This conversation is constructed, co-created so that you can understand it deeper and so you can begin to implement it not tomorrow, not next week, not next month, but today in this right now moment. So before I bring this wonderful human being on, let me tell you just a little bit about Case. So, Case has, or since I've been connected with him on social media for a few years, it's a joy just to be connected to him. So if you aren't connected to him, like, once this is over, you can listen, don't have to move, don't have to do a lot of things while you're listening to us. But before the end of the day, make sure you go and connect with it. So Case has written a book. And as someone who is an author, I value the author experience, the author journey. to birth that thing for others to consume. And the book is called Coming Out by Going In, The Freedom to Be Yourself. I'm going to say it again because you really need to understand the entire title, because I like the title. The book title is Coming Out by Going In, The Freedom to Be Yourself. And if you have already done that in your life by coming out to your friends and family, I think that you understand that there is a level of going in that must happen before you really and truly come out and express yourself. So without further ado, I'd like to bring on Case Erickson. Hello, sir. How are you?
I am good, Asa. Thank you so much for creating the space and time to have a chat and have me on.
Of course. I'm loving the fact that you are on. So I'd like to start our conversations a little whimsical. I don't want to go deep dive so soon. So my question to you is, this is what I ask every single person. What was your favorite toy growing up, and what about that toy, what does it tell us about you?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Gosh, favorite toy. The only thing that's coming up for me right now is Simon Says.
Oh, that was a good game.
And I don't know that I would say that was my favorite per se, but that's really the only toy that I can think of at the moment. And I would say that what I liked about it, I think I was probably between 6 and 9, I would say, the ages that are coming up for me, like when I think of the grades. Colors, I just like the patterns and just beating. Maybe it was like I'm competing against myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, how far can I go, you know, and how, like, and it was just like, beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, bop, beep, beep. And it would just be like, oh my God, I can't believe I got that far, you know? So, yeah.
I'm really, the moment you started doing the sound effects, I'm literally like, oh wow, that was a thing. Simon, you could play Simon for hours by yourself. Actually, now I'm thinking about it, Simon is a form of meditation. The way I'm thinking like, about it now, if you and I did it now, don't you think you would be a philosopher? You disconnect from everything and you focus.
Yeah, I'm about need to go get one now. I don't even know if they sell them. Probably on, you know, online somewhere. But I haven't seen them. In the stores. Of course, I'm not really looking for them either. But
very true. Yeah. I would love that. And I think that probably goes against the way toy manufacturers want for their audiences today. They probably want things that are, you know, multifunctional, can do a lot of different things, maybe even connected to the internet. So
they probably have it online anyway, like a virtual Go Play Simon Says on like Google or something. Anyway,
ooh, like an app.
Neither an app, or it's probably just like web based. I know, like I'm withholding my ADD. Is like, let's go check online right now.
Right, believe me and you both. I want to check right now. You're not by yourself with that. So the audience members are here. I still haven't found out a term to call the audience. Of course, they are entrequeur-newers like myself, but that's so long. So I still have to come up with a name for that. But for them, for the benefit of them, of course, I told them about your book. And we're definitely going to get to it. But what I would like for you to tell us a little bit is, can you tell us a little bit about the journey it took to even getting to the point that you were ready to write a book about authenticity?
Well, you know, it's obviously been a process. And for me, it was something that I just felt like I had all these stories, you know, and I would make posts and things like that on social media, and everyone would be like, oh, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. You need to write a book. So it was kind of like, I just kind of started choosing to believe that as a possibility for myself. And I didn't have a grand vision of anything in particular, like, okay, here's what the quote capital T-H-E book is. I just knew I had these stories. So it was like, I just started posting stories. I'm like, oh, I got to tell this story. I got to tell this story. I got to tell this story. How, you know, different stories throughout my life. When I was first subjected to the religious story of, you know, that said that I was born fundamentally flawed and I needed to believe a story that said that I could be saved from that. you know, and just like that impact of, you know, the literal interpretation of heaven and hell. You know, other stories of being gay yet married to a woman, my near-death experience, overdosing on this, that, and the other, experiences of falling in love for the first time, all these different, you know, experiences of manifesting money, experiences of manifesting any number of things. So it's kind of, I don't want to say a memoir because each one of the stories were distinct in that they represented what I like to call the gift of contrast. So, you know, we know what we want because we experience what we don't want. And so, you know, coming into the space of accepting all of it is dropping the resistance, dropping the judgment, dropping the notion that there is, you know, good and evil, that it's all love. And how can we bring love to whatever it looks like that feels bad? And so whether that's the narrative of heaven and hell, whether that's a story about life and death, whether or not that's a story about, you know, forgiveness versus resentment, we're at the middle of all of it. We're at the middle of it and we're all of it. And so, you know, I just started telling stories and posting them online, and it probably took me over a year or so of just like, okay, I got to tell this story. And I would just like let them fall out of me as they fell out of me. And congruently, my father fell ill and he got a stroke and passed away from brain cancer. From the time he got a stroke until the time he made his transition was 4 months. And so, you know, kind of being with that process and reconciling this whole notion of who am I and who am I as a father, as well as a son, and how does that relate to my relationship to myself and this quote unquote God story that I grew up with. And so, you know, the timing of it was such that I started with a story about how I was watching my son perform a musical thing, a choir, like he was singing in the choir. And I was just like overcome by the angelic presence of him. And I think he was is in fifth grade at the time. And now he's, you know, about to go into ninth. But just really being overcome by, you know, the beauty that was my life at that moment. And he happened to have been singing for his school, like his middle school, but we were in a church, a Baptist church, which I have detoxed a lot of what is now coined as religious trauma syndrome, which is an actual thing. And it mimics a lot of bipolarity as well as PTSD. And so just for me to be able to sit there and have joy in that moment and not be triggered and not feel like I was going to hell and not, you know, all of these things that would normally have triggered me, I wasn't able to be triggered. So that was, you know, a miraculous moment for me there, seeing my son, you know, feeling his presence, knowing my presence as a son as well as a father. So starting out with that story of, you know, just peace in who I am and my self-expression and in my authenticity, and ending the stories, all the stories that I had to tell with, you know, the reconciliation of myself with my father when my father made his transition. And so, you know, when I felt quote done with the stories that I needed to tell, then I just looked at, okay, what's the common thread here and what's the commonality and what's, you know, the common denominator in all these. And it, you know, went back to what I mentioned before with the gift of contrast. So I'm like, okay, this story represents life and death. This represents heaven and hell. This represents, you know, all these other things. And so each story represents one of those components. And then, so it illustrates a gift of contrast. So I just went in and added that, brought that out in an application section for each chapter and each story. And then I really wanted people to get the work of it and understand that it's a process. You don't automatically go from being traumatized to being joyful. Like, it's not an automatic. If there was a fucking remote for that, I would eat that shit up, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it's just not like you have to do the work. And I have done the work and I continue to do the work. And so it is a workbook as well. I mean, it legitimately has spaces for you to write in and reflect on and, you know, really question where you have come up with your own narratives and what beliefs are you running? And are you running a narrative that says you're fundamentally flawed? There's something wrong with you. You're not good enough or whatever. Where did that come from? How does that impact you? How would your life go should you choose to continue to rewrite that narrative? And challenging the reader to commit to something that actually works for them. And in that commitment, actually taking on a work. So each chapter also contains an inspired action, a challenge for someone to take on. And so that could be something like a meditation practice or a forgiveness practice, a bowl burning practice, you know, where you write down your resentments and you tear them up or you burn them or whatever. It could be have a grounding practice, something to do outside. A gratitude practice, making gratitude lists, sending thank you cards, you know, a forgiveness practice, you know, challenging, doing something that scares you, you know, really getting out of your comfort zone. So it really is, you know, a book, workbook, hybrid. And it's a lot of the work that I have done for myself just to get me to that space of what I call authentic self-expression. So, you know, getting out of this space of feeling like I have to be anyone other than I am or do anything other than whatever it is I want to do, and overcoming the stories that say, you know, what I want is bad or who I am is bad or, you know, any of this religious connotation stuff. It really takes work and, you know, intentionality and meditation and yoga and breath work. And for me, that's been all the things. And so that's what I encourage people to do throughout the book. So that is your like 37-minute answer to that question. I hope it all was relatively cohesive, but you know, when you ask like, what was the process of writing a book? You know, you ain't going to get a short answer with that one, Asa.
Now I get it. I totally understand. Believe you me. And so what the part that there are two parts that, well, not just two, the part that stood out the most to me, number one, you kind of glossed over being in love. And I don't hear a lot of talk in the queer community at this present time with the people that I know in this moment about the love stuff. I hear about the discrimination stuff. I hear about, of course, trans humans being killed. And I definitely support trans teens, trans people. And I hear about, you know, everything with Trump and and I hear everything about all this other stuff about what it means to identify. Well, I don't hear a lot of love stuff. And I believe that love, not to sound cliche, but if I sound cliche, oh, well, fucking well. Like, love is the answer. And love is really all you need. And at the basis of all things wonderful is love. So in your experience of falling in love, how do you feel that that taught you or added to your journey of being authentic?
How does being in love relate to authenticity? That's an interesting question. I mean, you know, the only thing that what's coming up for me is, you know, it was an experience. So, you know, for anyone who's listening who doesn't know, you know, I was married to a woman for 14 years and I did what I thought any good Baptist boy would do, which was, you know, to go down the quote unquote heterosexual route. I had had crushes on different boys in high school and elementary school and all the things, and just really withdrew from experimenting or expressing that in any way, shape, or form because I was sure that it was a sin and I'm sure I would get judged and that whole thing. So I didn't have any boyfriends or girlfriends or really anybody. And so the woman that I ended up marrying was actually had been my best friend for probably over a year. And, you know, I'd kind of just written myself off as someone who was incapable of either having heterosexual sex or sexual love, or like, or even being someone that a woman would be attracted to. You know, like I had the guy, like I didn't really have guy friends. All my friends were girls, and it just really kind of stereotypical, you know, gay boy story in that regard. And so, you know, when she and I first connected, you know, we kind of made out for the first time, and, you know, I'm like, oh, well, this is interesting. This is what, like, even though I hadn't been with anybody else, I knew, I kind of felt like there was something missing, but then I still enjoyed it. And so it was like, okay, maybe I'm just bisexual, you know, and just kind of told myself that narrative, or maybe I'm not gay and because we're doing all this. And then we had slept together and I'm like, okay, everything works. And so I'm probably not as gay as I thought I was. So like I think this is also common to men as well. You know, like a lot of men are like slutty in that way. Like, oh, they can just like fuck anybody. Pardon my language. And so, you know, what I know now in hindsight is that, you know, like, okay, I wasn't straight. I was just a hoe. Like I am a hoe. I'm a bit of a hoe there. I have a little bit of a hoe streak. And so I say all that to say, to give some context to my relationship to love and my relationship to relationships in general. It was very obligatory, very like, okay, God was going to get me for being gay, so definitely can't be gay. But now I've had sex with this woman and I'm not married to her, so I have to marry her because then God's definitely going to get me. And by getting me, it's like going to withhold the blessing and, you know, just all of that stuff, you know. And I call it, you know, living to appease to, you know, invisible sky grandpa. You know, this entity that says we're under constant scrutiny, we're constantly being watched and judged. And even if we accept the salvation story, we're then judged on our performance. So it's just like, you never really escape the judgment, is the moral of the story. So, you know, the relationship continued and was super dysfunctional and all the things, and it just continued in what I call a space of inauthenticity. And, you know, I experienced betrayal because of that. You know, 2 years in, it was like, oh, okay, I told her, I know I told you that I used to think, cause before we got together, it was like, I used to think I was gay, but I guess I'm not anymore cause we're hooking up and stuff. And I just felt compelled to tell her that. And so she believed that, I believe that. 2 years in, it was like, I'm still looking at like gay porn and stuff like that. I'm just like, okay, yeah, I'm gay. But then like, I didn't have enough courage to come out and leave her. And she didn't have enough courage to leave me either. And I believe that she was in love with me and I was not in love with her. And so it was just really like, because I didn't have any frame of reference for being in love or even knowing what that even was like, it was all an assumption for me. Like I just assumed something was missing. Do you know what I mean? Even though I hadn't experienced more, I just kind of knew that it could be more. And so regardless of all that and experiencing this betrayal and what I know now about betrayal, it's like, of course I was going to experience betrayal because I was betraying myself. You know, and the things that I say, oh, I can't trust you, I can't trust you, I can't trust you. It's like, oh, I can't trust me. Like, what am I saying? So the work of Byron Katie, you know, it's like what we tell other people's, like really the judgment that we push on. It's like what we bring upon ourselves. So, after she and I divorced and, you know, I got complete with all of the things, I'd never been with anybody else throughout the process. It was all just kind of fantasy. And then kind of, getting into the world of, you know, kind of dating men and all these other things and having the experience of like seeing this guy and just being like, what, like, where's he come from? And then, you know, like, hanging out with him, for lack of better words, and just being like, what? Like, I was 35 at the time, and it was the first time that I had ever had mutual attraction. Like I was attracted to this guy and I knew he was attracted to me. And that was the first time that I had had that experience to where I was just like, I was blown away. You know, like I was just like, I was on cloud nine, the world was in color. You know, my ex-wife at the time, I don't even know if we had officially gotten divorced, but you know, we were kind of friendly, cordial, but you know, shit hit the fan with an affair and all these other things. And so it was definitely messier than it could have been. or it could have been a lot messier, but it certainly wasn't clean by any stretch of the imagination. So after I met this guy, I remember going to swap out my kids with her, and she had my kids, and when I picked her up, and I hugged her, and I was like overcome with like genuine affection. And so, you know, the distinction that I continue to get through, you know, this obligation versus genuine, you know, like a obligatory relationship versus a genuine relationship versus genuine affection, whether or not that be with someone I go on a date with or my ex-wife. And so, you know, she was very perceptive, as most women are. And I just hugged her, and it was like probably, Asa, it is what it is at this point, but one of the few times where it was a genuine expression of affection towards her, to where I was really, really genuinely happy and grateful, and just like I really got who she was in the moment, and got the whole experience of everything. And that's how love changed me. And it wasn't even like super duper, like we've been in love and we're married and the whole thing, but it was just the possibility of love. It was like the beginning, you know, when you fall and you're just like, you know, rainbows and sunshine and the world is in color and you're hugging your ex-wife, you know, it's just like, what the fuck is going on? And so I remember hugging her, and she's like, what's going on? Like, she was genuinely confused. Like, she's like are you dying, are you okay? Like, she was literally like, why are you so fucking happy? And I was like, can I just love you? I just love you. And she was like, I love you too, question mark. Like, she just had like a big ass question mark. And so, you know, another roundabout answer to your question is, you know, that is how the experience of love impacted my way of being and my authenticity. Is, I mean, that is who I came here to be. I came here to express affection authentically, or express whatever's going on for me authentically. It's not all rainbows and sunshine and glitter and shit. Like, I've, you know, had my share of breakdowns and breakthroughs and all the things. And it's like, I, you know, have said many times before, it's like, I'm the ocean, you're the ocean, and we have high tide and low tide. And at the end of the day, we're all the current and everything's fine. And it's about not fighting and not resisting any point at which we might feel like we're in low tide. Cause it's like, okay, high tide's just on the other side and we're in the middle. And so, you know, that authenticity, that love, that expression of love, or that experience of love, really, it just puts things into perspective for me, for those times that I might not be feeling like all on cloud nine. I can just be like, oh, okay, you know, cloud nine's coming, or, you know, this is part of my access to cloud nine is when I'm like on the cloud zero, you know, like zero, ground zero or cloud nine. Like, I'm not going to be angry about cloud nine. I'm not going to be angry when I'm at ground zero, because I know that's my access. I'm just like, oh, thank you for ground zero, because now I know what cloud nine is. And so, yeah, that's how love affected, or continues to affect, my journey of authenticity.
Did love for your father affect it differently?
Say again?
Did the love that you have and had for your dad before or after he ascended, that's a term I use for dying, did that add to your authenticity?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, previous to his stroke, he and I had not communicated for about a year and a half. And about a year and a half previous to that, I had what I told myself was my last, you know, attempt to change him, you know, and I got like, he's a reflection of me and he's a projection and I can't, you know, change anybody. And it's an opportunity for me to accept him right where he is. And, you know, one of the last things that he said to me was, you know, the acceptance of homosexuality is the precursor to the downfall of society. And so, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, I'm done trying, you know, like I can love someone and appreciate them and not try to earn their approval. And I know, you know, this, you know, with your, you know, all the conversations that you have around being good enough, you know, being enough, mm-hmm. just enough. Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was a very conservative Marine, you know, Southern Baptist. He had his Master's of Divinity from Dallas Baptist Theological Seminary because he wanted to be a Southern Baptist pastor and leave the Marines to be a Southern Baptist pastor. So, you know, he had the rigidity, he had the law, he just had the literalist interpretation of everything. And so then there's me off in the corner, you know, playing with my stickers and ribbons in second grade. And let's talk about art and our feelings. You know, like it was just it's like karma, right? And so a lot of my pursuit with the relationship that I had with him was about trying to earn his approval. And again, it was a human manifestation of my concept of God as well. You know, and I think a lot of us manifest something in our earthly relationships with our primary caregivers as a means to clean up anything that we might have a relationship to with this notion of a divine creator, or I'd like to call it the relationship that we have with ourselves. And so it was just a lot, like I was always the one calling and texting and all of the things and da 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 da. And, you know, the thing that bothered me the most at the time was after I had my own children, and just like my love, just like bursting, like I can't even put it into words. Just like if I could just burst and melt into a puddle and mop me up, and like it just there are no words to describe the level of obsession and love and just like overcoming, overwhelming, unexplainable, ecstatic love that I have for my kids. And like after I had my kids, I then became even more present to the reality of like, what the fuck is wrong with my dad? Like, why, like mm-hmm. why ain't my dad yeah. obsessed with my ass? You know, like, and so like processing all that and just processing like, you know what? He's not, this is about him. This is about his journey. And he's just projecting all that judgment onto me. He can't handle my level of self-expression and my level of self-love and all of these things because he hasn't fully accepted that for himself.
Right.
And so I let it lie. There was no big dramatic thing. There was no like, I'm not talking to you ever again. Get out of my life. It was a very simple, you know, thank you for visiting, talk to you later kind of a thing. And I made the decision to just allow him to reach out to me. I'm like, you know what? He can, I'm done trying. But if he wants to reach out to me, he can. Like, let him make the first move. Right. And I mean, this was when I was like probably 40, 39, 40, something like that. And so a year and a half went by, like no texts, no birthday text, no birthday calls, my two kids, none of their birthday things, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all the holidays, nothing, you know, and continuing to, my mom would be like, so have you talked to your father? I'm like, no, he hasn't called. So my mom was kind of out there, and he had touched base and talked to my brother too. I have one brother, an older brother. And so I knew he was still alive and all the things. And so, you know, a year and a half went by, and the next thing I knew, my mom is like, your father's had a stroke. And, you know, he was barely coherent, and they were going to rush him into emergency brain surgery because he had over 20 tumors, too numerous to count. They just quit counting. He had so many. And so they were going to go in and take the bigger ones. And so she was like, do you want to talk to your father? And, you know, my rule was, I'm not talking to him unless he calls me, you know? And so I'm just like, I really sat with it for a hot minute. And I'm like, you know what? There's no harm in talking to him, and whatever needs to be said can be said. And so I did talk to him. I don't feel like he was fully coherent. And at the same time, whatever was putting pressure on his brain to express emotions, that's what was going on. So he was like crying, Asa, like he never, I don't remember. I remember him crying when our cat died, and that's it. Like he cried over the animals, and that was it. Like there was no show of emotion. And so he's crying about Jesus taking him on the table and, you know, all of these things where I'm just like, what the fuck is going on with my dad? But, you know, I'm like, you know, you'll be fine. I love you. I kind of said my I love yous and stuff. And he went into surgery, came out of surgery fine, but, you know, went through the chemo and was just never really like, there was the cognizance that wasn't there. And so, you know, there's me on the other side here and processing all of it. Like, I'm in Texas, he's in Virginia, and I'm doing the work. I'm doing breath work. I'm doing yoga. I'm like grounding. I'm just literally like moving so much energy and so much grief that I didn't even know I had, you know, through this process and through the letting go and just understanding like what a gift that was to be able to process his ascension, his transition, the way that I was able to process it. And so I got to a deeper space of love and acceptance for him in that, because I took on the possibility that, you know, these are all of us humans are what I call like fractals of God, fractals of the one. It's like a mm-hmm. one big mirror that kind of gets shattered, and it's all still the mirror, right? But it's kind of like all over the place, and you know, we're all together. So our job right here, right now, I believe is to come together and realizing that, you know, that's the premise of coming out by going in. It's like coming out, going in. It's like a process, you know what I mean? And so, processing that reality as, okay, this is a fractal of God that agreed to play a role so that I could get it. You know, what if it was possible that my God self said, let's create this drama where Case can understand love, Case can understand forgiveness, Case can understand authenticity and trusting himself. So, we're going to need some players of this. We're going to need you to go be the father who doesn't give a fuck and rejects him based on his orientation. We're going to need you to go be the spouse who cheats on him. We're going to need you to go be the best friend who sleeps with the spouse. And so he gets a double whammy of betrayal. So, like, really understanding that as a possibility for me helped me move into a new reality of compassion and acceptance, not only for them, but for myself, but also for them, you know, just like, okay, it's, I understand what, you know, Christ said when it was like, forgive them for they know not what they do. Maybe they just don't know, you know, and taking on that as a reality, like, oh, maybe they didn't know what they were doing, or maybe they didn't know that they were playing this role. Like, I have it that they played a role, and because of the role that they played, I got access to know who I am today. And it's like, there's no regrets, you know, I accept all of it. And so that's the deeper, lesson of love, for myself, for my father, for my children, for God, for all the things that I got through his transition.
That was, well, first off, thank you for sharing that. I have not lived long enough to have a parent ascend. And so I can only, literally only imagine the hodgepodge of feelings that someone goes through, especially when there was some strain and some challenges for the majority of that relationship while they were still mm-hmm. here on earth.
Yeah.
So, and I'm listening to your story, and I'm listening to the fact that, you know, your dad wanted to be a better teacher and in the Marines and didn't really fully celebrate and embrace all aspects of who you be. And if there is someone that is listening to you talk about that and share, and they haven't necessarily, you know, made peace with that, and they don't understand how to reconcile being authentic, but also not allowing your authenticity to berate somebody else's authenticity. Because the truth of the matter was, your father, that was authentically your dad.
Yep.
And you are authentically you. And so if someone is listening and like, I don't know how to reconcile my authenticity with someone else's authenticity, and if there's someone close to me that I value their life, how do I do that? What would you have for them to consider or do?
Well, it's like what they say in the four agreements, you know, one of the four agreements is don't take things personally, and it's not about you. So really understanding and taking that on as a reality, that how people act, what they say to you, how they treat you is what they are saying to themselves. period. You know, it's kind of like hurt people hurt people. Well, that's true. And so it really lets me, and I continue to, I mean, I'm like that with my mom. My mom is still living and she loves me. And, but you know, she worked for Pat Robertson, the well-known televangelist from the 700 Club.
Really?
For 23 years, Asa.
Holy shit.
Like literally just retired maybe like, I don't even know, this year, 4 months ago, something like that. So that's a whole other thing. And so, you know, when you say celebrate, and she goes to a Southern Baptist church, and, you know, like I've gotten to reconcile, and this fuels me, in answer to your question, it fuels me with what I can now be committed to, because any grievances that I might have against someone else in my expectation that they be anyone other than who they are, or treat me any other way that I wish to be treated. I mean, it's not about them. It's about me. So conversely, they're running their own show and I'm responsible for my own show in my grievances, in my complaints, in my triggers, you know, and part of the going in process is asking myself that self-awareness, whether I need to just sit with it or meditate on it or whatever, like, where am I being triggered? Why am I bothered? Oh, it's this attachment to the expectation that it go any other way that it goes, or this person be any other person than who they are. And what do I really, really want in this scenario? Like what is in me? Why am I bothered? And what do I want? And then how can I then, rather than expecting that person to be anyone other than who they are, how can I be the person that I'm expecting them to be? So it's like, I expect my mother to be more of an advocate. She loves me and I appreciate that. And she supported me and she supported me financially and supported me in my restaurants and my businesses. And I know we haven't even talked about the business side, but you know, the entrepreneur, all my little ventures, and like, she has supported me to what I believe is to the best extent of her, of the possibility for her to, given her literalist interpretation of the Bible things. And I genuinely believe that she wants me to be happy and she loves me like a mother and all these other things. And she's not an advocate for the LGBT community. She's not an advocate for me. She doesn't stand up for her gay son, so much so that she feels she sees no problem going to a strict Southern Baptist marriages, one man and one woman doctrinal church. Like, she's just like, well, I've got ladies and I do my ladies conferences and ladies retreats and all these other things. And you know, I'm like, I'm not going to pretend that I'm not bothered by her not wanting to be an advocate. And it doesn't necessarily change the fact that the only thing left for me to do is to be more of an advocate. I'm like, oh, I'm bothered. Well, I can't control what she does. I can't control her decisions. I have no say. I have zero say. But because I'm bothered, I'm acknowledging that I have a desire for advocacy. So how can I be more of an advocate? How can I forward these conversations? How can I hold space for people? How can I contribute? How can I volunteer? How can I give money? Like, I start asking myself all these questions based out of the triggers that I have, and just take on that anybody who triggers me is just an opportunity for me to step into more of what I really want for myself, because what I want for other people is really what I want for myself.
And thank you for bringing that up, because I have definitely been a proponent of the trigger language being all about us rather than the person who triggered or the thing that triggered us. And sometimes people use that as evidence to get to someone about, this is why you need to change because I feel triggered. And I'm like, no, the trigger was a notification to yourself saying, oh, I haven't healed that part of myself.
Right.
I have not allowed peace to abide internally around that. So there's a little message from spirit, from divine, from the universe, from myself saying, okay, you thought you were good and you're not. So go back, do what you need to do, but you need to fix that so that when it comes again, you don't have a continuation of being triggered, because a continuation of being triggered looks like you being perpetually pissed off.
Yeah, the grumpy old man, like, or grumpy old woman, a grumpy old person.
Exactly.
You just turn into a grump. Exactly. Yeah, for sure. So taking on those triggers, willing to take responsibility really for my own experience, is what it's been about for me. So I'm constantly taking that on and just constantly, like, you know, reflecting and being in that space of reflection and contribution and service. And, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, we can kind of get very creative and very, you know, like what we were talking before about ADD and all these things, and like, oh, let's go mm-hmm. look at this and squirrel and let me go register this domain name and da 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 da. I just think that, you know, like, that's just part of the process for me, is constantly taking that on and applying it to any areas in my life, and, you know, just doing the best that I can to be that space of love and be that bridge. And, you know, with particularly with the LGBT community and the religious community, you know, my mother thinks that, you know, well, the LGBTs, they won't let me have my beliefs. And it's just like, she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand the impact of her beliefs. Like, she's just very old school. And it's just kind of like, you know, what's coming up for me is like the times of segregation, when the white people were like, what's the problem with, why can't we, Rosa, we still have a seat for Rosa Parks. She can sit in the back. What's her problem? Mm-hmm. You know, like, there are fundamental things about the religious community that violate ethical principles. The ethical principle that we have as fellow humans to treat other humans equally, regardless mm-hmm. of race, gender, or sexual orientation, or handicap, or any age, any of the things. Like, equality is an ethical stand. Like, it's an ethical thing for me as a human. And so, if you're violating something ethically by judging someone based on anything that they can't help, that they're, you know, like, that's just who they are. That's nature. You know, tell me when I was a 5-year-old looking over at, you know, little Nicholas over, we were playing duck, duck, goose. And I remember, like, mm-hmm. oh, I think I see Nicholas's dick underneath his shorts. Like, and I was 5, Asa. Like, that is straight up nature. That is not environmentally influenced. I was the little queer boy, you know, like, in every grade, it's like, oh, Shane and his little dick underneath the desk in second grade. Like, seriously, like, that's nature. And so, you know, mm-hmm. when someone is judged based on what I feel is a natural thing, you know, and certainly there are components of, you know, the whole nature versus nurture argument, but I think we all have some sort of genetic disposition into something. And so just to even go into the whole conversation of like, oh, we're all sinners, you know, is just code for like, I'm going to judge you. And so ooh, it's very interesting for me.
That was nice. I like the way you put that. The way you said that, the whole "we are all sinners" thing is just allowing a place for judgment to abound.
It's code for like, I still think you're a sinner, but I'm not going to say that outright because that sounds bad. I'm just going to say that everybody's a sinner. So, there. I'm like, you're still saying that I'm a sinner, like, you know. So mm-hmm.
yeah,
you know, it's definitely interesting trying to shift the conversation. You know, I'm constantly balancing, okay, how can I accept people in that space, not judge them, and still acknowledge that there is a civil rights issue going on with the LGBT community, legitimately a civil rights issue. So, you know, how to stand up and say, I'm allowed to sit at the front of the bus, you know, like, sit wherever the fuck you feel like, right? And move forward the conversation peacefully and without waging war. And, you know, so I've recently been just started studying Gandhi. I mean, you see him quoted everywhere,
right?
But I didn't really know a lot about his, like, his actual life. And his actual life is fascinating. It leaves me with like, oh, what the fuck am I doing with my life? You know, like, the things that he did on a civil rights level just were astounding. And, you know, so really taking on this peaceful protest process and forwarding, you know, one of my friends, he runs this thing called Conscious Conversations. And he deliberately brings people from two different sides of the fence in order to find common ground, to find commonality.
I think I've been on that show.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's constantly like, okay, what's the common ground? Like I can say, okay, at the end of the day, everybody thinks that whatever they believe, they want to leave the world a better place. Most everybody believes that what they believe will make the world a better place, or they believe what they believe because they will feel better in the believing of it. Or if they feel bad, there's other, some, you know, subconscious commitment or anything like that. But, you know, like, people who believe in the traditional heaven and hell story, they want to believe that because they want to reconcile. They want to feel at peace with being here on the earth. They want to know where they're going. So it's like, okay, that's fine. I can respect that. And, you know, they think they're threatened that, you know, the gays are going to take over their traditional fam, quote unquote, traditional family. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're just living out of fear. How can I have, because it's a phobia. So how can I have compassion on them being afraid? And the only thing that I can come up with is how can I be more unafraid, and just allow myself to have those conversations, to be that person, to show up and say like, oh, you know, just call me the queer eye for the restaurant guy, you know? And so like, I just like out myself usually within the first sentence or two of someone not knowing me or someone meeting me, you know, and just acknowledge that I can only take responsibility for myself by being bravely, unapologetically, authentically me, in hopes that, you know, okay, we're going to move towards a world that is not stopped by fear. I don't think that we will eliminate fear. I don't think fear is the enemy. I don't, you know, fear less, like all this stuff around fear. I just think that, you know, it's about dancing with fear. It's about acknowledging fear. It's about thanking fear, really, because a lot of times as an entrepreneur too, it's like, oh shit, you know, it's like sell or starve. You know what I mean? Like you gotta, mm-hmm. you know, like fear is a motivator mm-hmm. to sell. I mean, it has been for me. And so just not fighting the fear, you know, not being afraid of the fear. It's like, you know, I have nothing to fear but fear itself, you know? And so, you know, just moving to a fear, you know, a brave world, which a bravery to me is not, it's not living fear free. It's having fear, but acting anyway. And mm-hmm. so again, coming back to what I said with the expectation of other people, like, you know, just expecting them, expecting of myself what I expect of them. And so it's a tough one, man. I mean, you know, the civil rights issues and how do we stand up and how do we build those bridges? Because legitimately people in the religious community feel like my mom, like, well, the LGBTs won't let me have my beliefs. Like they talk all about tolerance. Why won't they tolerate my beliefs? Like they just don't understand that they're violating ethical principles with their beliefs. And that's not acceptable as a human race in my world to violate ethical principles and tell someone that they have to sit in the back of the bus just because of their color of their skin. But mm-hmm. you would have heard the same argument 50 years ago by a lot of white people. Like, well, this is, they're separate. Like we're just separate, you know, and they probably would have used the Bible to substantiate slavery. And so I don't have the answers really, but I know that I need to be, I'm constantly like, how can I be more of an advocate? How can I give more of myself, you know? And the book was definitely an outing part, like, oh, I just out myself even more when I came out with it. Like, I'm just like, well, there you go. Like everybody's going to know I'm a cocksucker, you know, just one more person, just another person knowing that I'm down for dick, you know? And so like the whole, I mean, like it was a book about coming out, but not necessarily like, here's what to do about coming out. It's the commonalities that everyone has around fear. Like I say, everybody's got a closet to come out of. And so that's another thing that I would like to leave whoever's listening as a gay person, like really understand, or anywhere on the spectrum, LGBTQ plus whatever, that who you are as not the heteronormative, like you get to hold space. It is a gift. You get to hold space for authenticity because of the bravery that you get to push through in doing that. So it's like, that's a gift, you know, to be that quote unquote different, is that we hold space for other people to move through whatever fears they have. So not everybody has a fear of like, oh, am I gay or straight? I got to come out or whatever but they have plenty of other fears, plenty of other narratives and stories that say, oh, I can't break up with this person, or I can't go talk with this person, or I can't quit this job, or I can't go for this job, or I can't write this book, or I can't blah, 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 blah. And so you know, that's what I really like about forwarding this conversation of this brave world. And the freedom is a freedom to be yourself. It's a lot about overcoming religious trauma and, you know, any narratives around sexual orientation expression. But, you know, that's what the freedom to be yourself is about. It's about overcoming those fears or dancing with the fears, authenticity and bravery and all that good stuff.
So you talk about the freedom. Do you feel, have you always felt as free as you do now in displaying your level of gayness in entrepreneurship?
No. Have I always felt? No, absolutely not. Well, I mean, obviously when I was married to my wife and we were running restaurants, certainly I wasn't like, hey, I'm gay. Although everyone was probably like, that dude has a wife? Really? That's funny. right. Oh, God. But even after coming out, you know, like even after it was kind of like, oh, it was other people's, it's nobody's business. You know, I definitely kind of bought into that, like, well, it's nobody's business. You know, what I do in private isn't anybody's business kind of of argument. And, you know, no judgment there if someone is still in that space. I just understood that I wasn't doing anybody a service. I wasn't forwarding authenticity by staying quiet and by not being like, oh, hey, you know, I'm just like queer eye for the restaurant guy. I'm like, I kind of took that on. It's like my unofficial thing. I keep trying to think of something else that I can say without using the queer eye trademark. But I didn't used to say that. I used to like kind of like have to, you know, and I don't have a partner, and I've had a couple relationships here and there, but not like certainly not long-term consistent where I can just casually mention my husband, you know? So it's always like, it's important for me to, it was important for me to declare it in some way, shape or form. Even though it was kind of like, I'm sure people knew, or either they knew or they didn't care, but declaring that is a gift for myself because it gives me the permission to be fully self-expressed. So if I say I'm like queer for the restaurant guy and someone's like, okay, like I can kind of gauge someone else's response. And then I'm like, like you said in the beginning, like we are who we are and it's up to us to give ourselves permission for that. So certainly coming out of the book was definitely more like, okay, I'm really out with it. And, you know, I've produced food truck festivals as well. So I have about 400 food truck owners on an email database that I communicate with. And mostly it's for, hey, this brewery needs a food truck, or I've got this festival coming up, or eBay needs this, or da 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 da. I've done some entrepreneur training in their foodpreneur training, I call them. You know, and how to open your restaurant, how to take your business to the next level, branding, all of the things, right? But it's never been like, okay, hey guys, just so you know, I came out with this book. And so this was end of November that I'm like, okay, what can I do? Like I need, you know, it's another, I guess everybody's really going to know, even though my signature has got my email signature and my bio. I don't hide it, you know, so like in my bio is my little TEDx talk that I did on authenticity. And then, you know, the bio's got like how I was on the board of directors for Austin Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce for 2 years. And so I don't hide it, but I'm not like as out with it, as the book was pushing me to be. And so it was like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is more of me coming out. Yay. You know, like, hey guys, hey, every food trucker in Austin, Texas, which, you know, Austin's like kind of this little liberal oasis, but for the most part, you know, it's still Texas. So you still got a lot of the South and the Southern and the good old boys. And I don't know all 400 of those people. And so, but, you know, being like, hey, I've got this book. It's about authenticity. If, you know, if you're looking about taking on bravery and courage and authenticity, it's very like Brene Brownish meets gay. I don't know. Like, you know, and so that was a process for me. So now it's like, okay, I've got this book. And it's been very, very interesting. One of my food trucker dudes who I've known for years, and he has since opened a restaurant. He's like, oh my God, you know, he shared the book and he shared this. And he's like, can I get you to come sign? I'd love for you to sign it. And like, he was a surprising cheerleader to where it's kind of like, you know, that's the other thing. Like you never know who's watching you and you never know you never, particularly in the world of social media, like you don't know who's watching you. Like just they could not even comment on one thing. They could not like on one thing, but they're watching. And so that's the one thing that surprised me. And I got another one from some random pizza truck dude who now owns like 4 or 5 restaurants and his career's exploding. Haven't talked to him in forever. He's like, hey man, how do I get your book? And I'm like, what? You're alive? You know? And so it's been very surprising to me. So, I mean, I think that a pleasant surprise in the impact of pushing myself out. I think that other people get to do that for themselves. And so that's what I call the gift of gay, you know, like, that's the gift that we hold. And I really appreciate those who came before me, you know, from the Stonewall era and from even before that, that made it possible for me to even have the life that I have now, you know, to even be having this conversation and for you to be talking about queer entrepreneurs and like people legitimately have gone through hell and they're going through hell right now in other parts of the world. It's not like everyone's, you know, roses and sunshine and all this stuff. There's still a lot of work to be done, but understanding like we're here because of Trailblazers and there are still many trails left to blaze.
True. Blaze very, very on. True.
Yeah.
Very nice. So we are almost at the end of our time together. And before you give them, you know, where they can follow you, where they can get the book, I would like to know what, besides the gift of gay, how do you feel, or do you feel powerful as a gay human? And do you think that adds to your power, or do you feel that maybe you're still working that out?
I'm constantly in the space of I call it deconstruction. And so if you're familiar with any of the religious stuff, like it's a terminology, if you come out of religion, it's called deconstruction. So what am I giving myself access to my own power? Am I being powerfully myself? Am I giving myself peace, joy, you know, any of these things that I feel like I want? What is it that I really want? How can I just give that to myself right now without those things? Because I will always want those things. I will always want to create something, you know, I'll do a festival and then I'm like, oh my God, I got to do all these things to get it done. And then I get it done. And then it's like, it's done. And then I'm like, okay, now what? Like I'll never not want to be doing something. And so it's a matter of not putting off my own personal happiness, my own personal joy, my own personal peace in the present moment. And that to me is the exercising of power. And am I in my power? Like if I'm feeling powerless, is, you know, my emotional, that's sort of my emotions are an indicator of the gap between, or I wouldn't say an indicator of the gap, but my emotions are an indicator of wherever I am on that spectrum of, you know, the low level grief, sadness, joy, or grief, sadness, depression, all this stuff versus joy and love and all this stuff at the top. So my emotions are an indicator. And, you know, my only job is to close the gap between where I am and where I feel like I need to be. And I do that by just acknowledging who I am right now and acknowledging, almost patting myself on the back. And, you know, right now, God for me is like a Wayne Dyer figure. And he's like, pats me on the back. And like Wayne Dyer is just like very, very paternal for me. Like I get a lot of paternal energy from him. Mm-hmm. A lot of fatherly energy from him. I mean, of course he had 6 kids and I just love his story. And I've definitely consumed a wealth of his content. And so really feeling like accepting or receiving that pride from him and then receiving that pride unto myself and giving myself my own pat on the back and my own, like, you know what? I am proud of everything, you know, my career, my whatever, it doesn't matter, whatever happens to be quote unquote down at the time. Like it's all worth it to me because I can be in the space of authenticity, in the space of like, oh, What? Like, it's just such a relief to be able to just be myself, you know, to have clients. Like, I've had a restaurant client, I'm helping them with branding and photography and social media and all the things. And I'm like, yeah, I'm getting, like, it almost gives my design eye or my photography, it almost gives me like an edge, like my taste this is better or something like that. Like the straights are like, oh, we need him, he's gay. You know, like he knows more than me. Like, I'm not saying that's true for every gay, but I capitalize on that shit. And I'm like, yeah, let me be your, you know, da 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 da. And I'm like, just the, you know, and I actually went to school for advertising and design. And I first worked for creative services in a creative services department for an IT consulting firm right out of college. And I was married to a woman and I was, you know, producing content and graphic design and doing all these things. And like, I think that I definitely prefer it now that I'm out. Like, this is the design that I come up with. And this is, you know, I'm like the creative director now with all this permission that I give myself. So, I mean, that's the other part of like power is like giving myself permission. And in that permission that I give myself, you know, we hold it for other people. So, I mean, that's a very, it's humbling and it's very powerful. Again, it's like the ocean. And Wayne Dyer says, you know, the ocean is as powerful as it is because it sits below all the other water, like all the water, all the rivers, everything runs into the ocean. And the ocean is able to receive the level that it has because it sits below and is very powerful. There's nothing more powerful than the ocean in my mind. Maybe volcanoes, but whatever. But you know, that's what authentic power is for me. And Gary Zukav goes into that with in The Seat of the Soul, the distinction between authentic power versus inauthentic power. So authentic power is that space of humility and gratitude and recognizing the divinity in everyone else. And I'm not elevated. No one's elevated. We're all on the same plane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. That you saying this last part, yes, I resonated with all of that. So thank you for saying it. And I believe that someone who is listening definitely is able to benefit from it as well. And if you, and those of you who are listening, please, he mentioned quite a few books today besides his own. We had The Four Agreements. We had The Seat of the Soul. Of course, anything by Wayne Dyer. Please.
Loving What Is by Byron Katie.
Yes, Loving What Is. So go out, feel free to consume those, inhale those. Because it will make your life that much more interesting.
I'm Man Enough
better.
By Asa Lavoe.
Yes, I Am Man Enough by Asa Lavoe is one. So for those that are interested in getting the book, which I tell everybody to get the book, where do they go to get it and where do they go to follow you?
I'm at caseerickson.com, K-C-A-S-E, Erickson, E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N, caseerickson.com. There's a link to Amazon. Amazon's probably the easiest. On there, I'm still connecting with different independent publishers around the country, but definitely on Amazon. They search that, or like there's a link on caseerickson.com as well.
Great, great. So remember, go find him. I've definitely connected with him on Instagram. I'm connected with him on Facebook. So join me in the connection and reach out to the individuals that you see or hear on this show. As always, I am Asa Lavoe. Dreams and blessings.
Thank you.